Radio Prague News.
The election of the chairman of the lower house has been postponed until next week. According to a poll, 2/3 of Czechs approve of the new and tougher transport law, and Italy has opened its labour market to citizens of the Czech Republic. The Social Democrats have withdrawn the candidacy of MP Lubomír Zaorálek for the post of lower house chairman. As Mr. Zaorálek was the only nominee for the post, the election, originally scheduled for Friday, has been postponed until late next week. The Social Democrats say that they withdrew their candidate because they were not able to secure enough support for Mr. Zaorálek prior to the vote. Meanwhile, the two largest Czech political parties, the Civic Democrats and the Social Democrats, continue to try and negotiate a way out of the parliamentary deadlock. The Social Democrats, who came second in last month's election, have agreed to meet next week with the emerging coalition of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens to discuss policy priorities. Talks on the formation of a new government have been going on for some 6 weeks, since a national election resulted in a perfect split in the lower house of the Czech parliament. The deputy chairman of the Social Democrats for Management, Martin Starec, has resigned from his post. The CTK news agency reports that the reason behind Mr. Starec's decision was the fact that the modified party rules weakened his powers. The text of the party rules was the subject of a heated debate during Friday's meeting of the party leadership. The Central Executive Committee of the Social Democrats approved the new party rules on Saturday. A poll conducted by the Media Institute and published in the Mladá fronta Dnes daily on Saturday suggests that 67% of Czechs approve of the new transport law, which introduced tougher punishments for driving offences. According to the poll, most Czechs believe that drivers will be more cautious and there will be fewer accidents. Over 2/3 of drivers admit that the new law has forced them to change their driving habits. Since the law took effect on July the 1st, 43 people have been killed on Czech roads. During the same period last year, the number was 73, the paper writes. The European Commission announced in Brussels on Friday that Italy has opened its labour market to citizens of the newest European Union member states, including the Czech Republic. Italy is the second country in quick succession to open its labour market to citizens of the new EU member countries. Denmark also relaxed its requirements on July 1, 2006. Meanwhile, the closest neighbours of the Czech Republic, Germany and Austria, have not opened their labour markets to Czech citizens. Czechs can work without restrictions in Ireland, Sweden, the United Kingdom, Portugal, Greece, Spain, Italy and Iceland. And finally, a glance at the weather. The rest of the weekend should be sunny with daytime highs of up to 33 degrees Celsius. Meteorologists are warning that the tropical heat wave in the Czech Republic will continue until the end of July. My name is Pavla Horáková and that's the end of the news.
Thanks for tuning in to Radio Prague. Coming up next, our weekly magazine, Inside Central Europe. Don't forget that on some of our times and frequencies over the weekend, you can also hear our regular Saturday program. For details of precise times and frequencies, send for a brochure at Radio Prague, English section 10099 Prague 2, the Czech Republic, or visit our website at www.radio.cz/English.
Hello and welcome to Insight Central Europe with stories from Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, Slovenia and the Czech Republic. I'm Kerry Skyring and this week we profile Poland's powerful political twins. We discover Slovenia has friends in the White House and find out why students in Hungary are preparing to protest. These stories and more in this Insight Central Europe. But first, here's Dita Asiedu with the news.
Thanks, Kerry. Poland's new Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczyński won a confidence vote in his cabinet on Wednesday. In his opening speech to Parliament, he promised to reduce dependence on Russian energy supplies, saying Poland should develop nuclear power. Slovenia's Foreign Minister Dmitry Rupel said that Serbia deserved compensation for the loss of Kosovo, as Western countries push for agreement by the end of the year on some form of independence for the province. Mr. Rupel said Belgrade should be offered some kind of conditional membership of the EU. Italian police on Tuesday freed over 100 Poles living like slaves in forced labor camps. Those who refused were reportedly raped, tortured with metal batons, attacked by dogs, and threatened by armed guards. Authorities in both countries said at least 4 workers had apparently committed suicide in the camps in the southern region of Puglia, though those deaths were being investigated as suspicious. Slovakia's new Prime Minister Robert Fico said on Wednesday his government was looking for ways to control rising energy prices to help ease the burden on citizens. Mr. Fico said price regulations were one possible solution. The European Commission has told Hungary to fix its laws on tobacco advertising or face legal action before the European Court of Justice. The Commission said Budapest has incorrectly implemented an EU tobacco advertising law by allowing exemptions for rules that ban sponsorship, specifically mentioning Formula One motor racing.
Thanks, Dieter. Twin brothers now hold the 2 top jobs in Poland, those of President and Prime Minister. This is indeed a world-unique double act, as one news agency put it. But is there any other country in which identical twins have pursued independent political careers for 3 decades? Radio Polonia's Michał Kubicki reports.
The Kaczyński brothers won fame in the early 1960s, starring as young, lovable scamps in a film about the two who stole the moon.
Ty, jakby nam się udało, ale bylibyśmy bogaci. No i nie musielibyśmy nic robić. I tak nic nie robimy. No tak, ale wtedy w ogóle nic byśmy nie robili.
In this dialogue, they are amused with the prospect of becoming rich and having to do nothing once they steal the moon. Over 4 decades on, the Kaczyński brothers are graying rather than angelically blonde, but they are as ambitious and strong-willed as the film heroes. In the late 1970s, they emerged as members of the anti-communist opposition and solidarity activists. After the fall of communism, they often acted as power brokers on the right of the fragmented political scene. Lech Kaczyński, before becoming president last year, held several high posts, including that of justice minister and Warsaw mayor. His brother Jarosław is much more of a strategist who preferred to pull the strings from the back seat. 9 months after the conservative Law and Justice Party won the elections, they decided it was time to take the risk of the president and prime minister being brothers. The majority of Poles, especially those of the young generation, are not happy about it.
People knew from the start that the Kaczyński brothers were trying to take over all sorts of governmental branches that were available. So it comes as no surprise to me, and to many people as well, I think.
But I think that it's a very strange situation.
He isn't good, because 2 brothers couldn't be president and prime minister.
For many Poles of the middle generation, having the Kaczyński twins at the top is a source of hope.
For the first time in Poland, we have the real strong men on the right of the political scene. They were very active in Solidarity time. And I hope that now, after some time of creating new politics, new probably economical rule, I hope that these 2 strong men will rebuild Polish political scene, putting great priority for morality. They will act with solid determination.
Oskar Chomicki of the Poland in Europe Foundation says he's somewhat fed up with all that talk about identical twins.
If you look at these 2 men who are almost identical, and people have some problems in making distinguishing one from another, it's a rather source of more or less stupid jokes, but that's really irrelevant if you think of main problems that confront Poland today.
So what are these problems? Oskar Chomicki lists 2 major challenges ahead of the new Prime Minister Jarosław Kaczyński.
One issue is whether Poland's economy is going to proceed in the same direction as it has for the past 8 months or so, or whether it's going to take a new course. I think personally that Mr. Kaczynski is a very careful political player, as we say, and he will be the last person to decide to take a drastic change. What I am much doubtful about and worried about is Poland's foreign policy. Poland has ceased to be a credible partner for the European Union. This is really the point that I think Mr. Kaczynski should be made aware of and should realize as soon as possible.
The critics of the Kaczynski brothers speak of their all-or-nothing style and a certain radicalism. Konrad Schuller, the Warsaw correspondent of the Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, told me that their actions, especially the first decisions of the new prime minister, will be followed with much interest outside Poland.
We'll have to see whether Jarosław Kaczynski will be able to convince the outside world of the same realism, of the same non-radicalism that Kazimierz Marcinkiewicz could convince us of.
9 months after the elections, the Conservatives come first in popularity surveys, with around 30% of the people ready to vote for them. This is surely a major success for the Kaczynski brothers. But interestingly, the party's popularity does not translate into the popularity of the two brothers. It'd be interesting to look at the polls 100 days after the twin rule begins. I'm Michał Kubicki for Inside Central Europe.
Slovenia's Prime Minister Janez Janša was in the United States last week, meeting President George W. Bush and senior U.S. officials. There was high praise for Slovenia's active international role. Prime Minister Janša also met with representatives of the Slovene community in the U.S. This report on his visit from Radio Slovenia International's Ksenija Samardzija-Matul.
Slovenia's prime minister was warmly received in the U.S. and he had numerous meetings during his 5-day visit. It is obvious that Slovenia's current government wants to strengthen U.S.-Slovenian friendship and that Prime Minister Janša and U.S. President Bush share more common views than was the case with the former Slovenian government. I talked to Andrej Brstovšek, journalist from the Daily Dnevnik, shortly before he returned to Slovenia about relations between the Bush administration and the Slovenian government.
Obviously, the Bush administration is very friendly to our government, and I think for two reasons. One is that the government has decided to support the American mission in Iraq, and also in Afghanistan and other parts of the world. And the second reason is that Slovenia is going to have quite a role in the international politics in the future. It will preside the European Union in the first half of 2008. It will also preside the Board of Governors of the International Atomic Energy Agency. This presidency will begin in September of this year. Also, the Slovenia has a knowledge about what is going on in southeastern Europe, which is not quite a stable region yet. And, of course, there are some issues about energy which have popped up recently, and they were also discussed in this meeting. But they were not really critical issues pointed out.
Although Janša described bilateral relations in general as very good, he said there was room for improvement in economic ties. For this reason, Janša visited the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and talks focused on ways to strengthen U.S.-Slovenian economic cooperation. The Slovenian officials used this opportunity to outline the opportunities that U.S. companies have for investing in Slovenia. Political matters and regional developments topped the agenda of talks Janša held with Congressman and Vice President Cheney. Janša's talks with the officials also examined global hotspots and Slovenia's contributions to NATO-led peacekeeping missions. However, Janša's visit in the States started with a visit in Cleveland and Pennsylvania, where he met members of the Slovenian community living there. The Cleveland, Ohio region is home to an estimated 80,000 Slovenian Americans, making this the largest Slovene community outside Slovenia. Janša was warmly welcomed as most of Slovenian Americans are conservative and oppose Slovenia's communist past. Janša thanked all American civilians for their support in civilian efforts for independence in the early 1990s. Although not all civilian politicians were warmly welcomed in Cleveland, it has become quite a tradition for them to go there, as Andrei Prostoshek explains.
His official visit to the United States began on Saturday when he visited several Slovenian organizations of American Slovenians. I think it's quite a tradition for political leaders of Slovenia to go to Cleveland when they're visiting the United States. After all, it is the biggest community of American Slovenians in the United States. Also, this was kind of symbolic. It is the 15 years of Slovenian independence, and Americans in Slovenia have quite often been prized for their role during those independence days and during the war in Slovenia.
However, the press at home took a more critical look at Janša's first official visit to the United States. The Daily Dnevnik stated, since friendship often equals interests in politics, it remains to be seen what, besides a warm reception, Slovenia will get from this. For Inside Central Europe, this is Ksenia Samardzija-Matul.
A team of United States military experts has arrived in the Czech Republic to examine potential sites for a new missile defense base. The United States is said to be considering the Czech Republic, Poland, or Hungary for the new facility. But a Polish newspaper reports that Washington has already reached agreement with Warsaw. Rob Cameron reports.
The world's media has been rife with speculation in recent weeks over plans by the US to build a new anti-long-range missile base somewhere in Central Europe. Three countries are said to be under consideration: the Czech Republic, Poland, and Hungary. All three are NATO members. The new base, designed as an advanced guard against an attack on either the US or Europe, would employ up to 1,000 people, and though controversial, would bring substantial economic benefits and possibly even political rewards, such as the lifting of visas. The outgoing Defence Minister, Karol Kienl, told reporters on Wednesday that a team of some 20 experts from the US Missile Defence Agency will arrive in the Czech Republic next week to scour potential sites. Mr. Kienl said the team would examine existing bases dating from the Warsaw Pact era in Jince near Prague, Libová near Olomouc, and Bolatice near České Budějovice. No obligation would arise from the visit, he said, which would be purely technical in nature. However, a report this week by a Polish newspaper claims the Czech Republic and Hungary are no longer in the running. The Polish weekly Przegląd claims in its July 16th issue that Washington and Warsaw have already reached agreement. The base, says the paper, will be located in northeastern Poland, and work will commence early next year. It will be ex-territory in nature, meaning that Poland will have little or no control over it. The missiles deployed there, says the paper, would be equipped with nuclear warheads. Przegląd describes as camouflage claims that the Czech Republic is still in the running. However, the paper does concede that supplementary radar stations will also be built to provide advance warning of an incoming missile attack, and one of them could be located in the Czech Republic's Beskydy Mountains. The tone of the article is highly critical. No one knows for sure yet which country Washington will choose. But with the Czech Republic still lacking a government 6 weeks after the elections, a public that is rather sceptical of US military and political aims, and Poland's proven track record as a staunch US ally, Poland would appear to be the more logical choice.
Rob Cameron reporting from Radio Prague. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again, go to our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. You'll find text and audio of all these stories. Inside Central Europe is a co-production from Radio Polonia, Radio Prague, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Budapest, and Radio Slovenia International. Hungary's parliament this week passed legislation bringing in higher education tuition fees. From next year, it could cost students hundreds of euros each year. Understandably, students are upset and are threatening demonstrations. But the rectors and deans at universities support the move. Although the bill has already passed through parliament, negotiations continue between the education minister, István Hille, and student representatives on how to help students who can't afford the fees. Georgi Jakobi spoke to István Kerekes, dean of Corvinus University in Budapest.
If we would like to improve the quality of the education, we need additional resources. We have to do something, and I think some kind of tuition fee can be a solution.
Does that mean that the extra money could be used by the university?
They told us that we can differentiate as well. If we will get the necessary freedom to use it, then it can have a good impact for the education. So we are facing with a challenge of the European Union with the Bologna process. And I'm afraid that we can lose the best students if we cannot offer a very good quality education for them. They can go abroad, and instead of us, they can choose the German or Austrian or Dutch institutions. Then we can lose some brains. So there is a brain drain for the best students. So it means that we have to improve our performance, and we have to offer some extra. For example, an exchange program these days, you know, that less than 20% of the students can participate in that. It's sure that we have to send them abroad, at least for one semester. But how can we finance it? Because we send them abroad, then we have to accept those students who are coming from the European Union to us. We have to develop courses in English and in German and in French, but without extra money we cannot do that. At least some of the professors should be a native speaker. And we need to develop a so-called international faculty. But I cannot hire anybody from abroad because we cannot offer a normal salary. We have the target, at least in our strategy, to reach the 10% of the professors should be foreigner till 2010. One person who I hired is a young fellow, you know, a UK citizen, but basically he fell in love, so he is ready to work for a very Hungarian salary, but this is probably not the solution.
One must note that this tuition fee will be between 105 and 150,000 forints
per year.
This is lower than in the UK.
Yeah, it's much lower, but the problem is that running programs in order that everybody would like to attract the best students. So the university basically depends on the quality of the students. Certainly, it is related to the quality of the professors as well, but they are going together. So if we can attract the best students, we are the best university.
But what will happen to talented students who may not afford a tuition fee?
We have to develop a system, so it means that for those students who are capable but having an unfortunate family situation, we used to have this kind of system, you know, that we can offer different stipendiums for them. But the other side, unfortunately, I'm afraid that the Hungarian higher education system is a little bit bigger than the real demand from the 10% of the young population who used to enter the education system. These days it's above 50%, which means that it is reducing the quality of the whole education system because the average students is much weaker today than used to be 10, 15 years ago.
István Kerekes, Dean of Corvinus University in Budapest, he was speaking to Georgi Jakobi. And now to Slovakia's new tennis stars. Slovakia managed to beat Thailand 5-0 in the Fed Cup World Group Playoffs, the premier team competition in women's tennis. Now that result means Slovakia is now among the best 16 teams in the world. From Bratislava, Anka Dragu reports.
Slovakia won the Fed Cup in 2002. Afterwards, the team became embroiled in internal money-related conflicts that made a few players, such as world-class Daniela Hantuchová, stop playing in Fed Cup. Last year, the team got a new coach, Mojmír Mihal, who managed to give players a sense of discipline again and persuaded Hantuchová, currently number 17 in the world, to come back and play in front of a home crowd for the first time in 4 years.
It
has been an amazing feeling to play at home in front of your own crowd, to sleep in your own bed, to spend time with family and friends. If I had such atmosphere at every match, then I could keep on playing tennis at very high level for another 20 years. I was thinking how lucky are those players who have Grand Slam tournaments in their own country, because they can count on the support of their fellow citizens. I hope Slovakia will play more matches at home so I can come and show my best form in front of my own crowd, said Hantuchová after winning the match that brought a third decisive point to Slovakia in the tie against Thailand. Besides the world-class Hantuchová, the team is made of Jeanette Husárová, once ranked number 31 in the world and an experienced doubles player, Dominika Cibulková, who is still a junior but is very promising, and this year's Wimbledon finalist in the girls' competition, Magdalena Rybárikova.
I
lost my concentration a bit in that final at Wimbledon. Anyway, to be the runner-up in a Grand Slam final means a lot, so I take it as a big achievement. It ended my junior career. I hope I will have the same type of success in women's tournaments too. My goal is to finish this year in the world top 150. And of course, I'm glad I won some points for the Fed Cup team, said an 18-year-old Rybarikova. The new coach, Moimir Mihal, was satisfied with his team performance. Each player won her match, be it in singles or doubles.
Viete dobre, že keď som ja preberal funkciu, tak som povedal, že
when I accepted the job of leading this team, I made it very clear that I want to make it very competitive. I wanted to create a positive atmosphere, and I think I've succeeded in doing just that. I'm not going to run after players and tell them, please, please come to the team. And I'm not going to bargain any sum of money to lure them, because I think it is a duty of every athlete to represent her country, said Moimir Mihal. The coach was very glad that Daniela Hantuchová returned to the team. But for how long? I think I have already shown my position on this issue so far this year, when I have already played a few ties. I'm willing to represent my country, but I'm a professional tennis player, therefore I have to take into account my other obligations too. I want to play for Slovakia, but it depends on the time and type of surface of the next ties in the Fed Cup, said Hantuchová, who together with Dominik Hrbatý won the Hopman Cup on behalf of Slovakia last year. Slovakia will play their next match in April next year. Their opponent will be known when the draw takes place in September. Croatia, the Czech Republic, Germany and Australia are all among the candidates.
Anka Dragu reporting from Bratislava. And if you'd like to hear any of these stories again or find out more about the Insight Central Europe team, check out our website. It's www.incentraleurope.com. And that's it for another Insight Central Europe. It's a co-production by Radio Polonia, Radio Budapest, Radio Slovakia International, Radio Prague and Radio Slovenia International. I'm Kerry Skyring. The producer is Dieter Asiedu. Join us and the rest of the team next week. Thank you.